Accession number 22163, Reel 1.
So this is Frederick Arthur Jane.
That's right.
And you were born in June 1919.
That's right.
Where was that?
That was in Bristol. A district called Redfield, Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Bristol from 1919 until I came down to Devon in March 1988.
Right, okay. So what did your father do?
My father, I've got another story if you want it. I've got the history of my family there.
Oh, right.
Of my father, his father, and all my brothers and sisters, four boys and four girls.
Right, okay, well, we'll stick to you today.
Yeah.
So what did your father do?
He was a French polisher.
Uh-huh.
A cabinet maker sort of thing, yeah.
And you went to school in Bristol?
Yes.
And where was that?
That was Redfield. I think Redfield, what do you call it? No, not primary, what do you call it?
Oh, yeah, elementary?
Yeah. Redfield Elementary, yeah.
And where did you go when you left there?
Well, I had a short errand boy's job. I left there in 1933.
Right.
And in them days, there wasn't any work anyway, so I had to take a little errand boy's job, which I did for a few weeks, and then my dad went and found me something else, and I got into a shop working for a year or something like that. And after telling me only watched you for so long, when the money went up, you went there. Then I go to a training school then to get 7 and 6 a week.
Right. So when did you actually, you didn't join the army till 1940. Did you go straight from the shop to the army? Did you?
No, I went from the shop then. A vacancy came up because there's a Sunday school I used to go to. They had an advice employment bureau. And my name was on there because we went to Sunday school there. And that's the Douglas Motors, that was the people that made the motorcycle. I had the interview to go out there.
Oh, nice.
So that was in 1935.
Yeah.
So I went out there and had an interview. And I got, first job I was going to do was a foundry apprentice, that was filled. Then I was in a machine shop, that was filled. So eventually they put me down into a dispatch office. That's where they just stripped all the motorcycles and done the cleaning and all this. And eventually I worked myself into the office side there. I was from there 1935 then up to 1940.
Right, till you were called up.
Yeah.
So what did your mother do?
Well, Mum had 8 of us.
8?
So hers was a full-time job at home, really. She didn't do any work on it because Dad was sort of a semi-invalid, like from the First World War, and she just carried on family life, like looking after the 8 kids, like, you know.
Yeah.
And the money was nothing, it means tests and all that business in them days. 8 of us on 26 shillings a week.
So where did you come in the family?
I was first.
You were the eldest?
Yeah.
Right. So what did your mum feel about you being called up?
Well, it was all like sort of, you know, upset and everything like that. But of course, I suppose us in them days, what would I be then? I was just coming in 20. And I was then, I had to go down to Bristol in October 39 at my medical. Tried to go on a raft like everybody did. They said, sorry, but there's plenty of vacancies in the army, but it was a very peculiar thing on the medical board there. I went through all the reflexes and everything at the sight of it, and then jumped upon the table. The doctor came over because I had rheumatic fever when I was about 11. So they sounded me over, then he called his mate over, and he went all over me. He looked at me and I said, what's going on, your sort of thing? So they called the head medical officer over. He was my own doctor. And, oh, hello, sir, he said. This has been a life for your army life, he said. You knew I had all these problems, but you didn't put a finger and say, well, you shouldn't do the upgrade or anything. A1, there you are.
Really? So, what did you feel about joining the army?
Well, I think it was at that time that everybody thought, well, this is going to be an adventure. I mean, we'd been sort of used to city life, I suppose, and things like that. We didn't realise living in another country, in another sort of atmosphere, like it would be, you know.
So you were quite pleased to join, were you?
Yes, well, actually, I was pleased to join, but when I first joined up, I was called up into the Somerset Light Infantry.
Right, so where did you have to go? Where did they call you?
The barracks in Taunton.
Uh-huh.
I think it's Lowry Barracks or something like that, it's called.
Sorry, the Lowry?
Eh?
Sorry, what was the name of the barracks?
I got to think now, it's Barrack Vary. Oh, dear, dear, dear. And there was a big park there called Vary Park.
Yeah.
I know what it is, but it's just the main barracks. It was the headquarters of the Somerset Light Infantry.
Right, okay. Did you want to go into the Somersets?
No.
No.
But just, you know, that was how they put me in, like, you know.
Yeah. So what was it like? You went down on the train, did you?
Yeah, we went from Bristol down to Taunton.
Yeah. You all with our little
suitcases and everything else. In London, there was a lot going right the way down. And when we got out at Taunton, they had the marshals there taking us into the marshals and the barracks with our little suitcases and everything. We looked like a little beraggled lot, I suppose. And when we got inside the barrack gates, and there was all this big, like, charging going on across the square or something. Of course, you all get excited about it. And then, of course, we got kitted in them eventually, one thing or another. And I was there from January 1940 until about April 1940.
Yeah.
We'd been training. We'd done about 12 weeks training.
Right. So what was the barracks like? What was your sleeping quarters like?
Oh, it's the rough and ready iron beds, biscuits. What they had for mattresses in them days.
Yeah.
Like a wash place, just cold water and water in them days. So you had to sort of get an early morning call, like that, 6 o'clock. That was me valley, and then he was out and I had to get washed and shaved and operated at past six. PT and all that, this isn't. And that year, 1940, is one of the coldest winters we had. They used to take us out on PT with our little shorts and all, come back, we'd all line up with our hands out, and then this stuff you got to breathe out, because all the flu and that was about, we had to breathe all this up our noses, like, you know.
Oh, no. What was this? You had to sniff it. Oh,
it's like a pink stuff, I forget what they call it now. It's an antiseptic, it's antiseptic actually, to cure the germs, like. But you want to put it in your hands, they pour it in there, and the officer was everybody go, and breathe it all out your nose and duck. So, yeah. So we got used to it eventually. It was different being a civilian and being a soldier, but as I say, we got there and I was able to get from Taunton to Bristol on a weekend pass or like a day pass, which was very convenient. And I went on until January, until about April, May 1940.
Right. So and what was your corporal like on basic training? Because he's the one who had to teach you how to look after yourself.
Well, I remember his name was Corporal Salmon, and he was a regular, and he'd been an Indian or what have you, and he was our corporal in charge of our room, if you like, and he did us all the training arms during all this business, you know. So he was a very solid type of man, you know, but no messing, like, you've done what he was doing. And obviously, he didn't answer back, obviously, but I behaved myself, like, way through the arm, and I came in with an exemplary character, so.
So did you find it difficult, all the square bashing?
Of course, British Somerset, they were 160 steps in a minute, which is very fast. Of course, you carried your rifle at the trail then, but in the heavy infantry, you carried it in a slope. Well, we did this, like, I mean, everything was at the double, like. And we got so, a bunch of feet, it was so, ever so quick that you got into it. And eventually, we got pretty well trained on that. Our movements were good and everything was good, and the passing of people was, well, they're very fit. We've given you all the training we possibly can now. You stand by for what's going to happen next. Well, we got put from there down to another, I think it was the 5th Holding Battalion of the Somerset, down into Kent.
Right, okay. Well, we'll just stay in Taunton for the moment.
Mm.
So, did you do any aptitude tests while you were there, you know, to see where they might send you afterwards, or...?
No. You just had a better name, ranking, number, and that was your lot, you know.
Yeah. So, what weapons training did you do?
Well, I've done that was the Lee Enfield rifle, mm-hmm. and the Bren gun, mm-hmm. LMG, the anti-tank rifle. I think we've done most of them, because it was all the gas training, like, you know, the mass and all that business.
What was that like? What did they
Well, they used like a sort of very smarting gas. You would wait in this place, like, and then you got used to putting the gas mask on, and then you go in and you had to take your mask off for about 3 or 4 seconds, and then come out and all your lights all smarting all over the entire face. But we weren't very keen about that, but it was one of the things that might
have. Must have been quite frightening.
Well, we didn't know what it was, really. We would just accept, we'd go in there, and that was it, like, and I just accepted it.
So, What did you do in your spare time at Taunton? Did you get much spare time?
Well, not a lot, but I used to stay in a lot because we had a naffy there, like, but in the barracks, which we used, that was the cheapest way. They had several pubs there. We used to go out, not too often visiting a pub because it was full of the, what should I say, loose women. Things like that, and we were only kids, so I think, you know.
Did they warn you about the loose women?
Yeah, they said, well, look, keep up with so-and-so, keep up with so-and-so. We had the red caps around the town as well all the time. Mm. They caught you there. That was it, like, you know, that's all.
What was your sergeant like?
I can't think there were so many sergeants. I know we had a company sergeant major, and his name was Saunders.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a very smart, regular man.
Was he?
Oh, sharp as a button. He was the smallest man, but sharp.
Did he do the inspections, or...?
Well, no, the inspections were done. Yes, he did inspections and all that, and he used to take us on the drill training and all that, and put it out the way to use the rifle. And he said, you stood there, and he said, not like that. And you had your rifle, he said, give me your rifle, you... just shot at me, said, and he just catch it, like, you know.
Really?
And so that's the way to handle a rifle. So you know your rifle like you know yourself, he said. That's it. But it added up in time, you know. It sort of came to you in your training, and when it came to the real thing, you knew what you were doing and what you were doing, how to do it.
So, I mean, you learnt to be a soldier there, didn't you? You changed from a civilian
to a soldier. Well, that was a conscript, really, that.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. So did some men find this very difficult, the training? Did anyone drop out?
Well, we had, I think, about four or five in the batch that went with us there, and I think they were either a bit doolally or didn't know one, or didn't want to know, if you like, or they weren't medically fit and things like that. And I think, oh, the batch, there was only about five that were sort of returned home or whatever, and that was it. And of course, when we all prayed at on the morning, well, with our kit on to lead the place out there, to go down to Kent, and the commanding officer come out and he said, well, gentlemen, he said, you're now in the army, sir. We've done your training the best we can, the time we're allowed, he said, and then you're going to go out now. Where you'll finish up, we don't know. This was just before Dunkirk, you see. And I finished up on this, I got on a boat halfway across the channel to Dunkirk.
Right, so you got sent down to Kent?
Yeah.
Yeah, whereabouts in Kent, do you know?
The first place was Tunbridge Wells.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then from there, I went to Lydd. That was a big church, we had a brake gun on top of the church in the town.
So what sort of training did you do at Tunbridge Wells and Lydd?
Well, we were out on the, when this invasion scare was on, we were out on the coastlines, patrolling up and down, day and night, you know.
Yeah. But this was the holding battalion, was it?
Yeah.
Right. So you were on coastal duty.
Yeah. We'd done like the Romney marches and all the places where they thought they might land in that, you know.
That must have been quite scary, really.
Well, you just went into a bunker, like out in the middle of the marshes there, and no... no lights, we haven't got a candle, probably like that. Well, Dixie, like, was a tin and whatever, and that'll last you all night, and then you stay there from about 8 o'clock at night till 6 o'clock next morning.
Did you ever get any alarms when you thought something was happening?
Well, we used to get false alarms, sort of something moved out there, and you weren't allowed to fire your rifle, not unless you were sure, like, a couple of times built it up. I think sure there was something there. I know that did happen to me once down in Kent, and we're doing a patrol around a farm, I believe it was there. Pitch black, couldn't see anything, and I was walking along, and all of a sudden, I don't see something more. Because I told you, these fifth columnists and that coming in and dropping, like the wash out. Anyway, so I was sure, so I caught the rifle, and what's this trouble? Bang! It was a sheep.
Did you hit it?
Yeah. I felt sorry afterwards, I thought I had a bit of bloody German, but there it was.
Right. So how long did you stay on coastal defences?
We stayed there, I'd say about October 1940. Mm-hmm. And then they put us from there back up into Yorkshire.
Oh, right. Whereabouts in Yorkshire was that?
A place called Castleford, just outside Moortop.
Mm-hmm. Was that at a barracks?
No, they had it in private billets there, and we were fortunate we got billeted over a pub.
Oh, really?
So that was very nice. That was standard as good as gold, he was.
So you were still in the holding battalion, were you?
Yes, then, yeah.
So But you were saying that you nearly got sent to Dunkirk.
The battalion formed up, I think it was, you know, and we went from where we were up to a place called Ashford. That's where all the assembly points used to be for the convoys to get out of the docks. Get up there and they had this food kitchens going out, and then this was in the middle of the night, and then load up and get on the trucks, and then we went to the docks, off the trucks, onto the boat. We got, I suppose, about an hour way across the channel. There was all these others coming back, destroyers, was it, planes for, and we sort of, and eventually you could see what was a waste of time, so the boats got trimmed, and then we went back. So that was very fortunate, really. Yeah. Cause,
had you heard what was happening in France? Cause the Germans
well, where
had come
we
down,
were in Kent, we could look from on top of this church, we could look up, we could see the guns flashing all across the channel. You could see all over there. Yeah. And of course, none of the interesting things in Kent that I did, we were billeted on the beaches, and we had these whirl liners sunk into the...
Well,
it was like a liner, like a stone circle thing, went into the ground, mm-hmm. and that was your weapon pit for the night. And you had your brain gun in there with your box of max. Well, all the time you had this flying going on, the air blokes with the Spitfires chasing the others back across the channel. Twice I had a pop. And the first one I had, I put it through about 4 or 5 magazines. Sure, it's got it in there. But these brain guns are very accurate, but, you know, tell them what it's written while you were looking at. Anyway, I stopped and said, no, son, I see this what they call a yellow-nosed fighter bomber. And I see this blokey, and I knew very well he dropped one of these personal bombs. And for some reason or instinct, I dropped me head like that, and this thing packed about 10 yards in front of where I was. And I was going, zing! And a piece of shrapnel went and hit me. Still now, it made a dent in me, still now. If I'd have had my face like that, it would have been here.
So you watched the Battle of Britain then going on?
Oh, yes. That was every... When they used to come over, like, in their hundreds, we could sit back in amazement, but look at that. Then we used to watch our Spitfires and Harrigans going amongst them, like, you know. But every day we used to see this down here, you know. Yeah. Sometimes they used to come down and sort of machine gun us, like, you know, because we were sort of on the front there, and that was it. But we sort of took it as a daily routine, if we had a chance of a pop. I did hit a Dornier one day down there. It was on a Sunday afternoon, and without a bit of grubbing that, and I was in the training pit on my own, and this big Dornier, he was losing height going back over the channel, and he turned back in, and as he turned back in, so I let go like a caught in the light, and that was it.
Did you? you downed a Dornier?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was like, boy, I seen all the smoke coming, and as he jumped out, I still got all firing at him, like, you know. Then eventually we went and picked up the dead ones that we found and all the bits of souvenirs that were amongst that we took for ourselves.
So what sort of Bren gun training had you done? They'd had you, they
well,
I'd
done the when I was in the... Our first training was... I think the actual training, the weapons probably, would have been done in Colchester Barracks. That was done in Essex, that was afterwards.
Right, and that was after...
Because you had it every day in the barracks, so you had... weapon training, like different guns, and anywhere on the range with them and all this and that. And we've got to know all the guns and what they were for, and the only worst thing was the anti-tank weapon. Like got a big butt here and shot about that size. That was a fire at tank tracks. Like when you fire it down...
So when did you do your training with the anti-tank weapons?
I think that might have been down in Kent. I think it must have been down in Kent.
Did you go out on ranges, or did you take part in exercises?
Well, exercises and ranges. Because sometimes they used to use... Well, we used to use dummy ammunition, wooden, no bullets and that. We used to hate using them because you get the fire up, if you discolour all the... trying to keep them afterwards.
Yeah.
But they all deal with a bit of nail varnish on your thumb, like, and sort of make it shine out through the barrel.
So was it difficult to clean an anti-tank rifle? I mean,
well, the usual thing, you had a pull rod, with a 4x2 as we call it, straight on. What they call it, a pull-through. Yeah, that's a pull-through. Because that was at the bottom of your rifle, you had a pull-through, and a little oil bottle, and all that. But, of course, what they used to do in the army, when you were doing your training, your exercise, the butt of your rifle, you used to smack your mail, wham, mate, wham, they get sound, but like you should do some screw there, like I'm ready to do this, and it go around bang there. Well, I suppose I enjoyed it in its way.
Yeah.
I was a bit military about it for years after.
Yeah.
Yes.
Were you good at your shooting?
Well, I wasn't excellent, but I got by.
Mm. Did you do much map reading?
Yes, the map reading. That was the six numbers, three this way, three that way.
Yeah.
They give you a reference, then you've got to find out where you were on a map, all that, I've done that. Yeah.
Did you do much classroom stuff, you know, where they had...
Well, they used to do what they call... They'd have a big map on the wall, and they give you elementary training, say, Gap and Hedgerow, 9 o'clock, that was over there, you looked over, that was the position you might go for. So they give you all that training, like, so it was in your mind. So-and-so, 10 o'clock, there you are, for 9 o'clock, there, 5 o'clock, there, you knew, so your brain was, you know. So it was all basic training, but it was for a good purpose, really.
So you went up to Castleford, still with the holding battalion.
Yes.
Yeah. So what was Castleford like?
Very cold. Yes. It was the depths of winter up there.
Yeah.
But we did up a lot of route marching in the snow and that up there, you know. But we didn't do most of it was guards. I was always looked after my kit. And the first thing I always did when I got back up there, I got in the pub, my bed, where I had to go, I had these bunk bed things. And I had a. Like, I used to keep it in first-class condition. And every time I'd go on parade, I'd always get picked up as a Batman, a CO's Batman night.
Really?
But my kit got so well known because my mates used to say, here's five bob, this part of your kit. Well, they rumbled it half of it, and they knows whose kit it was, like, you know.
Really? So what was your secret in keeping your kit so well?
Just having it just right, you know. Like, even your string on your water bottle, like, even blanco that white blanco. And all this blanco stuff around your brick and belts and your clothes all the time.
So you acted as an officer's Batman, did you?
Yeah.
Right. What was that? What sort of a job
was that? Well, you rode in the cars that they have with their flags on the front. And you just walked behind them with your stick. You had a back with like a stick with a silver thing when you carried out and you sort of walked behind them. Opened the door for them to get in and get out. All that business. And I'd done when I was down in Colchester, I was picked out because of my special kit. What is it? I was made. I went a permanent Batman for an officer.
Did you? When you were at Colchester?
Yes.
Mm.
No, in Aylesbury. Beg your pardon, Aylesbury.
Aylesbury. This was after Castleford, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we'll come to that then. We'll do it in order, okay. So how long were you at Castleford then?
We got there in December 1940, and we wrote this about March, April 41.
Right. And where did you get sent there?
Then we moved then by coaches down to Aylesbury, Buckinghamshire.
Aylesbury, right. So still with the holding unit?
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
And then we joined, they had a big ancestral home there in Aylesbury, and we were stationed in there. Place just outside a place called Tring, I believe it was.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where we were. So if you want to go into Aylesbury, like, we had to walk about 7 or 8 miles. Unless you got a lift, if you were lucky. And you had to be back in the barracks at a certain time and all that, because this officer of mine, he got in a bit of a loose end with the women and that, and got himself in a lot of trouble. And we pitched the PRA funds and stuff.
Really?
He got arrested and put under arrest and absolutely did that.
What was his name?
Clatworthy.
Clatworthy?
Clatworthy, yeah.
What rank was he?
A lieutenant.
And what, he got into trouble with women, did he?
Well, he used to mix with the women, he liked the women, this was it, and he used to go out drinking a lot, and of course he used to finance his funds for the PRA funds. Like.
Oh, right. Which funds?
The PRA, as they call it.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
The officers' mess stuff and all that.
Oh, right. So what was he like to work for?
Well, he always treated me fairly. He never had any money. Because I was always had a bit of money because I had an allowance from my firm. A private payment.
Did you?
And that was about, I think, 30 shillings or something like that. Which was good. I used to let our mum have it. The firm was just send me on a few shillings. Right? And her officer, he was going, let me a pound at the end of the week. Like. I was sorry to see him because he was a smart bloke. He'd have done well in the, in the field, like, but I suppose we all make these dirty mistakes when you get caught like that.
So he was court-martialed, was he?
Yeah.
And he disappeared then, didn't
he? Yeah, I didn't see him anymore.
Did you have to do any... What other things did you have to do as a Batman? Did you have to look after his...
Like, you know, his kit, his revolver and all that, you know, and his Sam Brown, you know, all that. I'd be wearing that sparkling like a new pin when I had gone. He was pleased as punch with that. He left it behind somewhere else for one night. And then I could go next time and over the pubs to try and find it. I found it.
He was a bit of a monkey, wasn't he?
Oh.
Yeah.
But I've always wanted, although I had that, I wanted to be Batman and the Men, like, you know. Because
yeah.
We had a nice little click up on there, all sort of Londoners and what have you, but we got well together. We had some fun. But one of the best things in that, down in Aylesbury, we had two pubs there. One was called the Rising Sun. And I said, anyone just outside Colchester Barracks, just across the road. And we used to go down there. We had a pianist, and he was first class. And we also had a fellow that sang in ballads and all that. He had a perfect voice. And we also, about 10 of us, used to accumulate down the pub on a Saturday night if we weren't on duty. And he'd play the piano and all the bits and pieces, and we'd have a sing song every Saturday night down the pub, like, you know. And beer then was eightpence a pint.
You get quite a lot of pints for a pound, wouldn't you?
I could drink 15 pints then. Yeah. Not now. I could drink one now, only would have 15.
Yeah. So were they happy days at Aylesbury?
Oh, those were, yeah.
Was it Trim in Hertfordshire? Or?
No, in Aylesbury.
Yeah, it was Aylesbury. Yeah. You don't know what the park was, the country estate you were on?
It was a huge place, I can't remember the name of it now. But
never mind, yeah. So what sort of training did you do there?
Well, we went out on the route marches and field exercises and all that, you know. That sort of good mock training. I'd take a position over there and you sort of went out in platoons and sections and you had to go forward and do this and jump over dishes and go through water with all your kit on and everything like that. So we had some good training before we got out in the jungle. But I suppose Aylesbury was one of the best stations, really. But we weren't there very long because I think we went from there. Aylesbury. So we went back to Colchester again. We went into Colchester twice because I went.
Right.
I had my demob lead from Colchester.
Oh, right. So you went from Aylesbury to Colchester?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what time of year that was that you moved?
Well, I think it would have been about July.
Right, okay.
And then we were there, I think, from July. Then we were there around that area, I think, until 1941, before we went back to Colchester.
Sorry, you went from Aylesbury to Colchester?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you stayed there, did you?
Yeah, we do a lot of training all the time there in Colchester. We go out on schemes and all that, like, you know.
Oh, right.
And when they were at this invasion scheme, and you see what they used to have, we used to what we call in busing parties, we used to call it buses. If they had these invasion scares on, the parachutes were dropping, you had to sort of get took from A to B in these buses, and you were able to get on and off the buses quickly, like, you know. That's what they were for. That was.
Yeah.
You managed to put all your kit on until you get on and off a bus, they put 20 or 30 blokes.
Yeah, not easy, right? I'll stop me there. Frederick Jane, end of reel one. This is Frederick.